Welcome to the College Admissions Process Podcast presented by Prep Expert. Prep Expert offers live online SAT and ACT courses with the best score guarantees, instructors, and curriculum. Go to prepexpert.com to guarantee your child's success. Welcome to The Cap, where we are here to speak with college reps and other professionals in the field of college admissions to help answer all your questions and guide you through every step of the process. So if you're serious about college admissions, you've come to the right place. Are you ready? Let's talk about it. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Durante. Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you today Terry Malone, who's the Senior Director of Admissions at Clark University. Now, Terry, I got to tell you, I got quite a few emails from my listeners saying, hey, get Clark University on. So I really am so happy to have you here today, Terry. Welcome, and how are you?
Thanks, John. I'm doing well, and I really appreciate the invite to join you.
It's my pleasure, of course. Anything for the listeners out there. So, Terry, can you share what's new on your campus in terms of any exciting developments or even any upcoming projects?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a couple new things happening. We have a great, relatively new interactive media game design major. But the exciting thing about that is we opened up a new building last academic year to support that program. So the Center for Media Arts, Computing, and Design is a state-of-the-art facility to support our game design, computer science majors, as well as the production side of our music and screen studies program. So that's an exciting new space on campus. This fall, the fall of 2024, we invited our first cohort of students, first-year students, to join a four-year honors experience. And so we're really excited to be growing that new program over the next couple of years. And then next fall, we'll be opening the School of Climate, Environment, and Society, pulling together strengths that have long existed at Clark through our different majors, geography, environmental science, global environmental studies, as well as some of our research centers, but pulling it all together under one school to add additional resources and opportunities for both our students and faculty.
Well, that's terrific. And anytime you hear about new construction or, you know, expansion of programs, it's always a great thing. So you talked about the new interactive game design major with a new building. And anytime, again, you hear that there's new buildings on campus, you know that the school is thriving. And that new program that you also mentioned, the four-year honors expansion, along with so much more. So, Terry, what can you share about your community, academics, and even the extracurricular offerings that make students feel at home at Clark University?
Absolutely. So Clark's a small residential university. We have about 2,300 undergraduate students, first years and sophomores, all live on campus. Juniors and seniors, that's an option for them as well, and they're welcome to stay on campus for all 4 years. But that small, intimate academic environment is really a place where students can thrive. Their faculty are going to know who they are. They're in smaller classes. Our average class size is about 20 students. We have a 9-to-1 student-faculty ratio. So the intimate academic environment, I think, is special at Clark to help students feel at home in their academic community. We also take that learning outside of the classroom through, we have what's called problems or practice courses, which are courses that faculty teach in collaboration with somebody in the Worcester community. So an art history class that's being taught at the Worcester Art Museum, and students are learning how to curate exhibits, or an environmental science professor who's teaching a class and they're doing field studies in a local arboretum. So really utilizing where we are in Worcester is also an extension of our campus and the community. And then there are so many things that students can get involved with extracurricularly. We have over 130 student clubs and organizations, and they run the gamut from visual and performing arts programs to cultural-based programs, academic, service-based, and then just fun things like the beekeeping club or the board gaming club. So students are definitely able to find their homes within the extracurriculars. We also have Division III athletic programs. So there's a lot going on, and community is really at the heart of everything that we do at Clark.
Well, community is definitely at the heart. You're a small residential campus. You said it. It's about 2,300 students. I love how freshmen and sophomore, they all live on campus. Now, as a junior or a senior, you certainly have that option. And it's a really tight-knit community. You have a 9-to-1 student-to-professor ratio, along with approximately 20 students in your classes. And of course, everyone loves athletics, and you have a D3 athletic program. So thank you for the overview. And a lot of people have been asking me about interdisciplinary studies. So could you just elaborate, Terry, in terms of how important interdisciplinary studies are?
Absolutely. I mean, some of our majors are interdisciplinary majors. So, for example, a major in gender and women's study, you're studying those topics from the lens of history, English, political science, econ. So there's majors where that is going to happen, but our core academic experience is an interdisciplinary experience. Every student, regardless of their major, is taking classes across the disciplines. So I'm actually a Clark alum. I was a biology major, but I took classes in English and sociology and theater also, because Clark is designed to make sure that you're building skills, communication skills, critical thinking skills, analytical skills, looking at problems from different perspectives. So every student's going to have that interdisciplinary experience at Clark, and then some can dive deeper by studying a major from an interdisciplinary perspective. We also have interdisciplinary minors as well. Those are really popular, things like law and society and health and society, ethics and public policy, are all looking at an issue through the perspective of interdisciplinary departments.
Well, we appreciate that overview. And obviously, there's a lot of options in terms of the interdisciplinary offerings. And, you know, I asked that question because a lot of students and parents, after hearing your explanation, if that's something that appeals to you, it's definitely a question that you should ask. And it's not for everyone, right? But if Clark University has all of these interdisciplinary offerings, and it's something that you definitely want to immerse yourself in, then perhaps Clark University is, in fact, the right fit for you. Another thing that students and their parents, Terry, are very interested in hearing, of course, is about that holistic application review process. So can you explain your holistic review and what specific experiences the admissions team looks for when reviewing those applications?
Absolutely. I think that that word holistic, we toss around in admissions all the time, and I think we assume people know what it means. So I'd be happy to explain it. But our review process is really trying to get to know you, the student, as a whole person. There's no one element that we want to know. If we just looked at your academic record, we'd be missing a big piece of who you are. But if we ignored your academic record and only looked at your extracurricular activities, we're not looking to see if you're ready for the rigorous academic experience that Clark has to provide. So we are looking at both sides of those and digging into all of the different ways that you are who you are. So absolutely, the academic piece is important to us. We're looking within the context of your experience, in the context of your school, what kind of classes did you have the opportunity to take? How well did you do in those courses? What are your teachers saying about how you engage in the learning process and the community process through the recommendations? We look at the quality of the writing that is demonstrated throughout the application to get a sense of writing ability, but also to get a sense of who you are as a person. The writing that you do as part of the college application process is a personal piece of writing. It's not the same as a paper that you're going to turn in to your history teacher or a biology lab. It really is trying to give us insight into who you are as a person. We also get that insight from your teachers, as well as from the choices that you've made and how you've engaged in the communities that you're a part of. So we look at that. How have you engaged in your school community? What extracurricular activities are you involved with? Are you on the robotics club? Are you in student government? Are you an athlete? And you don't have to be all of those things. That's another term we talk about, is the well-rounded applicant. If theater is your passion and that is the primary thing you do, that is okay. You don't also have to be the athlete and the manager of the economics club. Do the things that you love, and that's going to come through in the application process. But that's what we mean by holistic, is not just you in a one-dimensional way, but we're also looking at the context of where you are and what you've been doing throughout your years in high school.
Well, we appreciate that. And obviously, the holistic review process means that, as you put it, you're looking at the whole person. Mm-hmm. You want to know that they could handle the academics. So you look at the rigor that they challenge themselves with based on the context of their high school. You want to know what teachers are saying about them and those letters of recommendations. You want to know the quality of their writing. And obviously, you want to get a chance to see what their personality is, which you can decipher in their personal essays. but also based on perhaps some of the activities that they choose to partake in after classes are over. So let's dig a little deeper and unpackage all of this just a little bit further, if you don't mind, Terry.
Yeah.
First of all, what are some of the things that students do to demonstrate their interest in Clark? And is that something that you track and use during any part of your application review process?
We do use demonstrated interest as part of our application review process, but that's not why you should do the things that I'm about to tell you. The things that we track within demonstrated interest are things like visiting campus, interviewing, and you can do that in a lot of different ways. We offer interviews during those campus visits, but also virtually. When our staff is on the road, we'll visit where you are. When our staff's on the road, if they visit your high school, that's and you show up at that meeting, that's a way that you can show interest. We do virtual webinars, and you attend one of those, that's another way that you can show interest. We have an optional essay on the application in itself, and writing that essay, we have seen students that are more interested are more likely to write that optional essay. But again, you shouldn't do these things to check off boxes to look better in the application process. You should do these things because these are the things that are going to help you learn about Clark and help you decide, is Clark a place that you're interested in? And that's the core of why you do it, not to check off those boxes. Like I said, we do track it. We do use it in our application review process. But it very rarely is the defining thing in an application. If you are a strong student who has been engaged in your community and you're doing all the right things in your day-to-day world as a high school student, you're going to be a strong applicant for us, even if you haven't visited us or done all those other things. But if you are doing those things, we know that you're looking at Clark in a more intentional way, and that's a positive thing for us.
Well, I really appreciate what you said. First of all, yes, you track it, but more importantly than that, students shouldn't be demonstrating their interest and doing all of the things that fall under that umbrella just to try to get a better place in the application review process. Students, you should be doing that, whether it's visiting campus, engaging with the emails, doing virtual events, what have you. But you should be doing that to determine whether or not the school, in this case, of course, it's the beautiful Clark University, you should be doing all of that to determine whether it's the right fit for you as part of your research. So I think that's such a great point, Terry, and I couldn't agree more. Now, I know that Clark has been test optional for over a decade, right? So you're one school that didn't go test optional because of the pandemic, like so many others. Have you made any changes to your standardized testing policy? And can you share the percentage of students who are actually accepted that did not submit test scores?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we, as you said, John, went test optional many years ago. It was a very intentional choice. We felt that who a student was day to day in the classroom and the community was more important than how they did on a standardized test. And then we felt we could make good decisions without that. And we still feel that way. So we are truly a test optional school. Students can choose on their own whether to submit their SAT or ACT. We do not require test scores for merit scholarships. So for both admissions and merit scholarships, we are test optional. And to be honest, the majority of our students do not submit test scores. Last year, about a third of our applicants submitted test scores. And there's no difference in the admit rate, the retention rate, the graduation rate. So we have found and we've looked at it to make sure that the policy that we have in place is still helping us attract students that can be successful at Clark. And we see no difference for students that we admitted with or without test scores in how they persist through the university. So we're confident in that decision of being a test optional school.
Well, we appreciate you also mentioning the fact that it is not required for those merit-based scholarships, which is so important for so many students. Just curious also, sometimes schools are test optional, but students may submit, for example, if they're available at the time of the application, advanced placement exams. Is that something that students do at Clark University or not?
Yeah. So we don't need the AP exams as part of the admissions process. But absolutely, we give advanced credit for enrolling students who have qualifying scores on AP exams. Qualifying score is a 4 or a 5. So those students can get credit for those classes. If they line up with some of our Clark core requirements, they could waive them out of those requirements, and they can just use them to accelerate their pace in certain subject areas. We also give advanced credit standing for students that have been enrolled in the IB curriculum based on their exam results, or if students have just done dual enrollment classes at local colleges close to them, we'll give up to a year's worth of credit for all of those different sources. So students who have really accelerated their academics and done well in those environments could potentially come in with sophomore standing.
Well, we really appreciate that, Terry. And What's your institutional priority in terms of the number of freshmen you are looking to admit each year, of course, as an incoming class, and how many overall applications do you receive to fulfill that number?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that there's another number in there that's important, and that's how many are we actually looking to enroll? Because you have to admit more students than you're going to enroll. So we're looking to enroll somewhere in the mid 500, somewhere between 520 and 560, I would say, in any given year is a good target number for us. We have to admit a little over 4,000 students to get to that point, because every student that we admit is being admitted by a couple other schools also, whether that's two or three other schools or eight or 10 other schools. But you can only enroll at one. So we have to admit a lot more students than we're actually looking to enroll. And to get to that 4,000 or so admits, last year we had over 11,000 applications. So we are a selective institution, but we're not trying to be exclusionary in our process and really trying to enroll students from a wide range of areas.
Well, I appreciate you sharing those numbers. You received over 11,000 applications. You admit out of that 11,000, approximately 4,000 to try to yield a class of approximately 520 to 560 freshmen. So we appreciate that insight. And of course, Terry, the transcript is a key component, right, in terms of that academic review portion of any application. Can you share how you look at the transcript holistically, as opposed to just looking at a GPA in isolation? And do you recalculate the GPA as part of your review or use the one indicated on the transcript?
It's a great question. As I mentioned earlier, we look at everything, including the transcript, in the context. Every school has different opportunities available, different curriculums, different grading scales. And so one of the things that your school will typically send in addition to the transcript is a school profile. And that is a really helpful piece of information to give us the context we need to then look at your transcript. We absolutely do not look at just the number at the bottom or the top of the page. The GPA is not the end-all be-all of our review process. We're going to look course by course. What kind of courses did you take each year? What level did you take them? College prep, honors, AP, IB, or other ways that your school has to challenge yourself. How are you balancing those? We want to make sure that students are taking, English, science, social science, language, math, etc., and really finding balance there. Most of our students have mostly A's and B's on their transcripts, but we do understand that some students might hit a rough spot somewhere along the way, and there might be a lower grade. When there are lower grades, we look at when did they happen. We're pretty forgiving of ninth grade. Transitions are hard. You're not the 14-year-old self that you were then. So we're pretty forgiving of ninth grade. Junior year is a little more important to us, and so understanding what's going on there. Some students may just have a strong AB record, but then they struggle in one academic area, and so we'll look at how does that impact the overall chance of being successful at Clark. So we really are trying to look at it, again, just like the whole application is being looked at holistically, that transcript is as well. We do recalculate a GPA for every student. We recalculate an unweighted academic GPA, so that we have a standardized look for students. So that is part of our process.
Well, we really appreciate that, Terry. You gave us so much information. Number one, as a reminder to students and parents, the importance of that school profile so that you could look at the student based on the context of their school. Students, if you're not familiar with your school's profile, go to your school counseling office or check their website. And I really love how you talked about the GPA and how it's really not looked at in isolation. You're looking at trends over the years. I appreciate that you said if there's a dip, but the dip was in ninth grade, not as bad as if something like that happens in 11th grade. And students, I would add, if something does happen where there is a dip in a grade, try to explain the why at some point in the application. Maybe something happened in the family, right? Whatever it is, try to explain it, because whatever you leave out in your overall application, you're going to leave it up to the admissions reps to speculate as to why, which you don't want to do. Am I right, Terry?
Absolutely right. Yeah, again, the context matters. We understand that we're all humans and that things will happen that influence the academics. And when we don't know why spring semester your sophomore year, you struggled and got mostly C's, if we don't know why, we can't use the context to help understand the overall transcript. So agree completely with John. Give us the context we need if there are some dips or holes in your application.
Terrific, Terry. Thank you so much. And have you seen any recent trends in students' personal statements and essays that stand out to you? And perhaps can you share some tips for writing a strong essay?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that because of the major global pandemic that we all went through a few years ago, we definitely saw our students focusing on that and how it impacted their lives, their family, their education. We are a little further removed from that, and we're seeing less of those this year. But that was a trend we were definitely seeing for a while. We are starting to see, or at least get questions about AI and ChatGPT and stuff like that in the application process. And I would say the essay is meant to be a personal piece of writing. No AI can write that for you. Would be my first piece of advice, is make this a personal piece of writing. Think about things that are important to you. You're not trying to capture 18 years of your life. This is not an autobiography. This can be about a moment in your life or a piece of your life. And I think that if you pick a moment and write about it from a personal perspective, it's going to stand out as an essay. One of my favorite essays of all time was probably one of the simplest stories. It wasn't earth-shattering, life-changing. It was a life-changing event, but it wasn't an earth-shattering event. A student wrote about becoming a big brother when he was 7 years old. And it was a kid that could actually write with humor. That is not a skill that everybody has, but it was a funny essay about the anticipation of meeting his little brother and then running home from school and looking in the crib and seeing the ugliest creature he'd ever seen in his life. And again, he could write humor with humor. Not everyone has that skill. And I would say don't try to be funny if that's right. not your skill. Again, be true to who you are. The other thing I would say is make sure that it's your voice. There's going to be a lot of people that want to have input in what your essay is about. And that's okay. Ask other people to read it. Get some advice on topics and how to approach that. Get somebody to look at it to make sure that it's got sentence structure and punctuation in all the right places. But don't let anyone change it so that your voice becomes invisible. I think that that's probably the biggest thing is that I see in essays that don't work is they're overwritten and there's almost too many voices trying to come through and I don't know which one's the students.
Well, that's awesome advice. There are so many things that you talked about. First of all, you said, write about a piece of your life, right? Mm-hmm. Don't feel that you have to review 18 years, 17 years, whatever it's been. And if you're not funny, don't try to be funny. That's not something that's so easy to pull off. And of course, use your own authentic voice because that's the one area in the overall application where the admissions representatives really get a taste of your personality and who you are. It's not as simple to see your personality necessarily in a transcript or an activity sheet, so use that personal statement for that reason. Now, Terry, what makes a letter of recommendation truly impactful? You know, you mentioned earlier that you want to hear the teacher's voice about the students, and in addition, have there been any notable examples recently that made a difference in an applicant's evaluation?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think that the teacher recommendations that are the most helpful are ones that it's clear that the teacher and the student have a relationship, that they know each other. So when you're thinking about who to ask, don't think about the grade that came the easiest to you. Don't think about the A+ that you got in your junior year history class and just assume that that's the best person to write your recommendation. Think about a teacher that you have a relationship with, that knows who you are, that knows how you've approached your academic work, who knows what you're involved with in the community, because that's the other thing. Your teachers are going to write about you as a student. Absolutely. But when they can also help us understand who you are in the community that you're a part of, that can be really helpful. And so one recommendation that stands out to me from last year was actually that if you looked at the student's transcript, you'd be like, why did you ask the one teacher that you got a C+ out of? Why did you do that? But then when you read the recommendation about the work ethic and the perseverance and the student's ability to work through challenges and to find success and always do it with a smile on their face. And it really came through on that relationship. So I think that that's what you want to think about when you ask recommendations is who can help me be a real person and not just words on a piece of paper.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. You talked about students asking a teacher who really knows who you are and who can explain who you are in that community, right? Whatever high school you're coming from, because if you ask a teacher and he or she basically repeats what's on your transcript or repeats what's in your activity sheet, it really is a missed opportunity, meaning that it's not adding anything new to your overall application. So we talk all the time about the importance of understanding that the overall application is in fact a marketing package. Each piece of it has a task, has a meaning, has a purpose, and each of them have to build on the next. Would you agree with that, Terry?
I would absolutely agree with that. And I also think that that same advice goes towards the what's the right number of recommendations? We sometimes get asked that. So Clark requires two. We require one from your counselor and one from your academic teacher, but we'll read additional recommendations as part of the review process. But if you're starting to ask the fourth or the fifth teacher, stop and think about what new will they be able to provide.
Right.
Because if they're not going to provide anything new, don't clutter the application. But if you have, you want to ask the English teacher and the science teacher and your soccer coach, go ahead and do that. But as you start, I think as you start to get into the fourth or the fifth one, really pause and think about what more, what different will this person provide that the others couldn't.
Such great advice. Thank you so much, Terry. And I was also curious, what are the different ways for a student to apply to Clark University? And I'm talking specifically about things like early decision or early action. And Terry, is there a benefit to applying one way over the other in terms of actually being admitted or for those merit-based scholarships?
Sure, absolutely. So Clark has early decision, early action, early decision round two, and regular decision. So as a first year, there's four different decisions you can make in terms of which round makes the most sense and really what timeline makes the most sense. We do November 1st deadline for early decision and early action, and then a January 15th deadline for early decision two and regular decision. Any student that we choose to admit, it doesn't matter which round they applied, their merit scholarship is going to be the same, regardless of the round. So those are pretty standard and not something that you have to worry about. Will I get a better scholarship if I apply one over the other? The benefit of applying early decision, though, is that we do meet 100% of demonstrated financial need for any student admitted through an early decision round. We would love to be able to commit to that for every student, but right now we're not there yet. So when we decided to start on that pathway, we decided to start with the students that are making the big commitment to us to apply early decision. So we were going to make the big commitment back to them to meet 100% of their need and help them feel confident that they would get the best possible financial aid package. Given that they can't compare financial aid packages, we thought that was an important step.
Well, I'm so glad I asked that question, because many times I speak to parents and students and they're afraid to apply to a school in general early decision because they're worried about the financial aid package, right? Because of course, early decision we know is a binding contract. So early decision one, students, if you are accepted in that round at Clark University, you get 100% demonstrated need. So again, I'm really appreciative that, you know, I asked that question and you explained it. And of course, in terms of merit-based scholarships, it doesn't matter which round you apply in, it would be the same. So Terry, what about students that may have had an IEP or a 504 plan while in high school? What resources does Clark University offer to help ensure that they continue to be supported once they're on your campus?
Great question. As you would expect, it's a highly individualized answer. We have an office on campus called the Student Accessibility Services Office that works with students with documented needs for accommodations. We don't have a comprehensive program that you might see at some other schools, but we do have a wide range of accommodations. Things that are fairly routine, again, depending on the individual needs of the students, are quiet, distraction-free places to do exams, extra time on exams, use of technology in classroom, getting the notes and the slides ahead of time when there's lectures and things like that. But again, highly individualized toward the student's needs. There are other services that are available for any student, not just students registered with Student Accessibility Services, that would be helpful services for students with those needs. We have a writing center on campus. We have a peer tutoring center on campus. We have a quantitative drop-in center that will help with any kind of math or analytical classes. So there's a lot of resources available to all of our students. And then through Student Accessibility Services, they'll put accommodations in place based on the documented needs. That office also works closely with our Strategic Learning Services office, which provides some executive coaching opportunities for students to meet one-on-one, to do calendar management and things like that. So a lot of great services that students just have to make sure that they register with that Student Accessibility Services office to tap into.
Well, definitely a lot of great services. And I think, you know, Terry, I always put the Office of Undergraduate Admissions in the show notes. If there are any other links that you want to share, for example, your Student Accessibility Service office or anything else, just send it to me. And of course, we'll make it available to the students and their parents in the show notes. Now, Terry, this has been an awesome conversation. Before I get to the last question, I always like to ask, are there any questions that I didn't ask or any topics that simply didn't come up in this conversation that you'd like to share with us now?
Yeah, I think that something that people need to know about Clark is our 4+1 accelerated master's degree program that is an opportunity that over a third of our students stay and take advantage of. But we have over 22 different master's degree programs that students can do in only one additional year. They start taking graduate level courses during their senior year, stay for one academic year, and earn a master's degree in just 5 years. With the best part about this entire program being that qualified students get a 100% tuition scholarship for the 5th year of study. Wow. So students are able to earn a master's degree without taking on any additional tuition debt. And a third of our students stay and do that program. So I think that that's something that people, when they're, college is expensive. And when you look at these price tags, they're, and we already talked a little bit about financial aid earlier in terms of the merit and things like that. But when you add, when you look, we're thinking about the value of a place, there's a lot that goes into it. And at Clark, that 4+1 accelerated master's degree is a big piece of the return on investment that we have for students.
Yeah, I'm so glad I asked that question because the 4+1 programs are so important. You have over 22 of them. Almost a third of your students take advantage of it. But more importantly, that 5th year is free, which is amazing because, as you said it, college is very expensive. So rather than doing a 2-year master's degree, which is usually the case, you're doing it in 1 year. So you're graduating sooner and you're not paying for it, which I think is amazing. So again, Terry, this has been awesome. Unfortunately, it does lead us to the last question, which is, what are your top 3 pieces of advice that you would provide students and their parents getting ready for the college admissions process?
Absolutely. My first piece of advice is be open-minded. There are a lot of great institutions out there, and maybe you haven't heard of one that will get suggested to you, but don't write it off because you haven't heard of it. If somebody's suggesting it to you, whether it's a counselor or a teacher or a parent, somebody that knows you and knows that school is saying, hey, I think you should look at this, go ahead and look at it. I'll be honest, for me, that was Clark University. I'm only about an hour away. I had never heard of it. It was suggested to me, and I said, I know where I'm applying. I don't really want to do this. And my dad scheduled the visit, and I came, and I'm still here. And it was a great undergraduate institution for me, and I was glad that my dad forced me into being open-minded. But be open-minded about your choices. Second, and this is kind of a family recommendation, is that this process can start to feel overwhelming at times. And especially when you're in your senior year and you're actually going through the application process, I think there's a tendency to, that a lot of conversations become about where are you visiting? Where are you applying? Have you finished your essay? Did you hit submit? What about this? And that can become really stressful. A piece of advice I have is, as a family, decide on a day of the week and a time that you're going to have those conversations. Sunday evening, Tuesday morning, whatever it is, whatever works in your family schedule. And have those conversations then, so that the rest of the week, you can just be talking about how your day went and what you learned in class and the soccer game that you want to go to, and not let this process consume your senior year. Third piece of advice is have fun with this. Again, it can be stressful, but especially when you're going out on those road trips and you're visiting campuses, have fun with that. Enjoy the time in the car. Put a good playlist on. Build in time to go to a museum or a park or whatever it is as a family you like to do, and not make it just about how many visits can we squeeze into February school vacation week. So I think those are 3 things that I think if you can do some of those, you'll have a successful process.
Well, I think those are tremendous pieces of advice. And we always remind students that there are over 4,000 colleges and universities in the United States alone. There's definitely more than one school for each and every student, but to your point, Terry, not every school is for you. So be open-minded, try to enjoy it, and good luck to everyone with the college process. Terry, you're awesome. I hope to have you again. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks so much for the opportunity. This has been a fun conversation.
It's been a lot of fun, and the pleasure's been all mine. And to everyone out there, good luck with the college search. Take care, all, and best wishes.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend. And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The Cap.
Hey, podcast friends. If you've been enjoying the College Admissions Process podcast, I'm excited to share my new book, Straight from the Admissions Office, Insider Strategies for College Applications. It's packed with insights and tips from over 250 podcast episodes with admissions professionals designed to make the college process less overwhelming. Whether you're a student, parent, or college counselor, it's a valuable resource for navigating the admissions process. By grabbing a copy, you're also helping to support the podcast. The links are in the show notes. Thank you, and best wishes to all with the college admissions process.